Before we get down to today's show, I want to let folks know about two important handicapping contests that are coming up. The first one we're going to talk about comes via our friends at Canterbury Park. It's the Big Ten BCBC handicapping contest. This one's a big deal, folks. We've got 10 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge entries, two NHC entries, and $10,000 in guaranteed cash. September 16th, 2021 is the date. It's a $3,000 buy-in. You can also look to qualify for this contest if you go and check out horseplayers.com. In the meantime, I might try to get out there myself for a little mid-September trip out to Minnesota. We'll see if that happens or not. But in any case, I'll be watching with great interest the Big Ten BCBC Handicapping Contest on Thursday, September 16th, 2021. For more information on the qualifiers, go to horsetourneys.com. And to learn more about the contest itself, visit our partners at canterburypark.com. And also want to let you know about the rescheduled LRF Cares handicapping tournament. This one is now happening on the Saturday of Labor Day weekend, which is kind of cool. A little bit of an appetizer if you're playing in the Kentucky Downs contest that we've talked about online. This one is a $500 buy-in, a live money contest. You got to wager 50 or more on five live Del Mar races. And the prize pool includes cash, a $10,000 BCBC entry, and also two 2022 NHC entries. Proceeds going to charity on this one. Great cause. We want people to get signed up and support this handicapping challenge out at Del Mar. And for more information on this, you can check out DMTC.com and go to their contest area, or you can email lrfcares@gmail.com. Little Red Feather Cares putting on this contest. Want folks to check it out and hopefully register to play today. Again, that email, lrfcares@gmail.com. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show ahead of a loaded weekend of racing. Saturday, July 31st is the races we'll be talking about on the show, recording the day before. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatow, coming to you from the DG Flophouse. Once again, adjacent to the Little House on the East Side, we've got a trio of guests, and we're going to get to them right after this first word from one of our partners. Today's show brought to you in part by our friends at Equin Edge, AI technology for horse racing handicappers. Equin Edge uses AI to analyze past performance data on every horse in the U.S. in real time to develop the most advanced horse racing prediction metrics in the industry. You'll hear all about it in the upcoming segment. But we've got this fantastic offer now only for In the Money Media viewers and listeners. You can get a free month of Equin Edge if you go to the sign-up page and use the promo code FREEMONEY. You can also go to equinedge.com/freemoney to see that sign-up offer. And just to spell it out for you, it's EQUINEDGE.com. No double E in the middle there, just equinedge.com. Check it out and make sure to use that promo code FREEMONEY. First up on the show today, we have a returning guest. He's been doing a great job joining us on these Fridays, talking about racing all over the country and doing it through the lens of this new AI handicapping software. You just heard me read the ad for Equin Edge. He is Scotty McKeever. Scotty, how are things out there in Del Mar?
Fantastic. The meet's been good so far, and the weather's been beautiful. So, yeah, it's been beautiful, Peter.
That's good. That's good. I heard a rumor you're doing okay at the windows as well. That's never a bad thing.
No, never. It's yeah, I've been doing very well. My picks have been doing pretty good. I've been doing the simulcast with John Lees, as you know, in the mornings or afternoons, early afternoons. That's been great. And so, yeah, I've been in really enjoying my time doing that with John.
John's a good dude. He's a fellow Saratoga Special alumnus, I guess I say. I think every year pretty much is out at Del Mar, but one summer he came east to work for the paper when I was working there, and over the years gotten to know him out in the Del Mar press box, and he's done a real nice job holding down that simul feed over the years. And I would imagine his perspective and your perspective fueled by the software are a pretty good complement to one another.
You know, I was surprised by that, but yeah, it's exactly what's been going on. We complement each other very well, and he can really handicap. He's really good. I think there's some really good information that we give out on the simulcast every day. So all Thursdays through Sundays now. But I think it's been great. We've complimented each other. What's been interesting is that every time I eliminate a horse, you know, because we have the eliminate feature here on Equine Edge, and every time I eliminate a horse and he says that he likes the horse, the horse is 5 for 5.
So keep that in mind. Normally you want to roll with Scotty and Equine Edge, but when John Lees is on the other side, it's okay to fade him once in a while too. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, well, it's really uncanny what's been going on. So, and the first three times it happened, I'm like, it's a fluke. But after the fourth time it happened, the fifth time, I'm like, no, I was all over that horse. I singled the horse, and the horse ended up winning for fun. So I just couldn't believe it. But yeah, that's kind of our thing. We were wondering if when we agreed on a horse, if we would win. No, that's not been the case. It's when I eliminate a horse and he likes it, it's winning every time.
That's hilarious. I want to talk to you about another special project you have going on early next week regarding the Manitoba Derby out there in Canada. Tell us about what you got cooking.
Yeah, I'm doing a live stream with our friends north of the border and covering the Manitoba Downs at Assiniboia Downs. And it's going to be August 2nd at 5 p.m. Pacific. And you can watch that you can subscribe to Equine Edge on our YouTube channel, or you can also subscribe and get emails. So you'll get notifications either on emails or on YouTube. And we'll be covering that at 5 p.m. Pacific. And there's going to be $1 million guaranteed in the pick six. It looks like it will be over $1 million, or the pick five, excuse me, it'll be over $1 million.
That's fantastic. That's definitely something that players should be paying attention to. Heck, we might have to do something for in the Money Plus service as well for that. We'll figure out what we're going to do, but it's always nice to have that midweek action. And that's just another chance to get to see Scotty do a deep dive into the Equine Edge tool. Today, we're going to be using the tool to talk about the late pick five at Del Mar. You mentioned, Scotty, that you've done some work on this, but maybe not as much work as you typically do. So we'll get a little bit of your thought process as you're going through using Equine Edge, the tool, in real time. I think that's one of the great things about the product, especially with the NHC now, just 4 weeks away, how quickly you're able to get a little bit of a line on races using the tool.
Well, and that's really important too, because, I was really busy last night, so I didn't get a chance to really handicap this, but, you know, the same thing happened to me over in the Pegasus tournament at Gulfstream Park in January. I won that tournament with no pre-handicapping, we've been doing it a long time. Normally these tournament players, they're handicapping for a week ahead of time. And so that's the one benefit to using Equine Edge, is that you can be confident on most races, all races for that matter, and without any handicapping prior. And that was huge. So I feel like I have a life now instead of just handicapping for hours upon hours every single day. So, and we're going to try it today because I haven't really had a chance to look at the card.
You can mix and match too at an event like the NHC. Maybe you're somebody who plays Saratoga and Del Mar, so you do those your traditional way, but then you're not necessarily going to miss out if you know how to use the Equine Edge tool in a basic way. You can use that to quickly go through the other tracks and maybe find a couple of angles you like, a couple of spot plays, and cut down on your time massively. It's a question of finding your own style with the tool. I, so far, have never done a day just using it. I'm using it completely supplementary. But let me tell you, from my experiences with it, I can see the power. And I'm curious to chat with you about these races through the lens of Equine Edge. We're going to start off with race number 7 on Saturday. It is 8:06 Eastern, the time of this race. We've got 3 and up filly and mare, cowbred allowance types, going 5 furlongs on the turf. Scotty, where is your eye drawn in here?
Alice Marble, the 3 horse, is a horse I'm really looking at here. This horse has been a distance one time of 5 furlongs, and that was it broke last of 10 horses from the 2-hole. And this horse's form is very good, has won 2 straight races for Phil D'Amato. Flavian Pratt is aboard. Horse has a good genetic strength rating, which stands for GSR, which gives us breeding in the last 3 generations of the family of each horse. And so it's a good number, very good number of 60. As a matter of fact, it's the highest number in the field, tied with the 11 horse Akai. I don't like the post of the 11, but Alice Marble is going to be my top pick, the 3. But I'm going to use the 2, 3, 7, 9, 10 in the first leg.
I like two numbers that you mentioned. I have made the 7 Lava Lane my top pick. Horse looks pretty obvious on figures and form for the always potent team of D'Amato and Rispoli, and I was hoping we'd be able to get the right kind of trip. And then Alice Marble back on the turf. Another interesting angle there, I thought, was you might look and say, wait, maybe this one's better on the other surface. But those previous turf runs, she wasn't breaking. There were gate issues that seemed to have cleaned up since then. So I think Alice Marble could go a lot better here. I had it 7-3, and I'll certainly take another look at those backup runners you mentioned, the 2, 9, and 10. And with that, we'll move on to race number 8. We've got 3-year-old claiming colts going 7 furlongs on the dirt in this spot. And my eye was drawn to number 6, Wipe the Slate, who I thought would get a great stalking trip from an outside position. The form of that last race is working out very well with 5 to run back and 3 winners out of the field. Wipe the Slate was the one I was the most interested in. Looking over the Equine Edge tool, Scotty, what are the numbers that leap out at you?
Well, I do like Wipe the Slate, but I'm going to take a chance in single herd immunity, the 1. And I just think Bill Spahr, Flavian Pratt's aboard. I think the horse is going to get a good trip. There's only 8 horses lined up, but this one's got a really good GSR as well. Faced a really tough group last time out. This is a much easier group here. Was really finishing at 5.5 furlongs. Now goes 7 furlongs, and I think that herd immunity, it on paper, it looks like a wide open race. But if you're going to hit some good payouts, you're going to have to take a chance somewhere. And I think that the late pick 5 could pay really good on Saturday, because the fields are really tough, as you probably have seen yourself. But I'm going to take a chance on singling herd immunity, the 1.
I had a GSR question for you. I use it all the time when a horse is doing something different, whether it's a change in surface or change in distance. And it's the tool gives you a couple of different ways you can look at a horse's genetic strength rating relative to itself. Because if you go through the past performance lines in Equine Edge, you can see what the GSR was for the horse going a mile. And now maybe today it's cutting back to 6 furlongs. And I will note every time when it's a significantly higher number doing the new thing today. Do you find it to be helpful in isolation with horses with form? In other words, a horse, you know, you have a line on how good the horse is at 6 furlongs. Are you still looking to try to stack it up against the rest of the field? Is there utility in that? Or is it more, do you use it more the way I use it when something is different today?
So just different, right? Because sometimes you could see a horse that maybe the last 2 or 3 races, the form looks really bad, but they're doing something that they don't necessarily want to do. And I have to use the horse in that situation. But where I really like it is when the horse had a low GSR and ran decent, ran good, or maybe showed some speed to the stretch. And then all of a sudden you're seeing the GSR go up 10, 12, 13 points, something like that, from one race to the other. And you're like, wow, that horse ran that good, was really competitive. And then now all of a sudden is moving up, gets some, you know, higher points on the GSR. That's where I really like to use some horses. I had an example of a horse maybe a couple of months ago where it was 29 points higher from one race to the other.
Wow.
And the horse, yeah, and true story. And the horse was 20-1 in the morning line. 20-1. And I singled that horse as if it was a 4-5 shot. Yeah. And true story. And then, and that horse ended up winning that race first time on the turf. And that's all that horse wanted. And so I keyed that horse and I hit a extremely large pick 5 that day. So the GSR can really help you, like you said, especially with the horses doing something for the first time. And the other thing, Peter, that you can do is you can use that with the SOR, the strength of race, because if you've got a GSR that's going up, and then you have an SOR that's going down, meaning it's easier competition, you can use those two in combination with each other. And that's a really good combo.
Good stuff. Let's talk about race number 9, Scotty. 3 and up allowance types going a mile and an eighth on the turf in this spot. And we'll throw it right back to you. What do you like?
Well, I have to lean. So we got this allowance optional claiming, and these horses, the top win percentage is 22% on the 6 horse ready sold. I mean, it's that wide open of a race. I'm going to have to go with the 2, 3, 5, 6, 11. I'm not going to give one horse in there because I just think the race is that tough. So 2, 3, 5, 6, 11 is what I'm going to use there. I wish I could give more information on that race, but, you know, and it's just really looks tough. I will say this, Media Blitz, the 3 horse, has a 77 GSR. That's 8 points higher than the next closest horse. It is moving up though in class here, so we'll see if it can handle it. But at 15 to one morning line, Simon Callahan, Juan Hernandez, maybe that horse has a look. If I had to pick one horse that would be my top pick in the race, it would probably be the five horse, probably Ocean Atlantique. And that one's only raced four times back on the turf. They tried the non-turf last time out. That didn't work out well. This horse ran a very good at 9.5 furlongs over at Keeneland. I think that Ocean Atlantique could be tough.
I agree with you about the spread race, to the point where the one that I picked, I actually tried to use a pace angle in here and use one you didn't even mention in your spread. We'll get to that in a minute. I like what you said about the top win percentage being only 22% in this race. I want to pause on that. So one of the things, basically Equinedge is made up of several different algorithms. One of the very useful ones is a calculated win percentage for each horse in the race. And what that can do, I think, de facto, is give you a sense of how volatile a given race is. So when you've got 60%, 70% of the win percentage wrapped up in one or two horses, or maybe even two or three horses is a better example, you're going to generally, when I look at that, Scotty, I see that's a race that's formful. Whereas a race when the predicted favorite by win percentage only has about 20%, that looks a lot more like a spread race. And I've been starting to use that feature to help me construct multi-race exotics. And I assume that's what you were just doing there on the fly, very quickly identifying this as a spread race without having done any kind of deep dive handicap.
Well, and here's the thing, you can use the metrics in combination, but absolutely. So give an example, like you got Ready Soul, who's 22% in the race. And this horse is 7-2 on the morning line, 3-1 on the EE morning line. But a horse like this horse could go off at 8-5. I mean, these are the types of horses you just have to beat, and you're going to beat them more often than not, because this horse has, like the six horse as an example, has a 78% chance of losing. So you can find some prices here when you're looking at these win percentage being so equal, right? And then you can use the other metrics, because, you know, there's 26 different algorithms on our website. So you've got the genetic strength rating, the average SOR, the win percentages, the EE morning line, Scotty's top pick, Scotty's long shot. I mean, that's just the beginning. So 10 different long shot algorithms, the 10 different algorithms on the ticket generator. So there's a lot of different algorithms here. And so even if the win percentages aren't showing you something and they're showing you that the race is tough, you might still be able to find a horse or two or three with some of the other metrics.
And I went outside the box, or not really outside the box, but outside the Equinedge box, and just relied on some pace handicapping here to come up with the number 7, Sash, who has a few different angles for me. Ran inefficiently, too fast, too early the last day, and I think with a more measured run could get the best of things from the front end. Dropping out of a stake, back onto Lasix, extra ground to work with. This is the kind of horse, if the GSR had matched up with this one, I would have been a lot more excited. I feel like it was more of a meh in terms of how far this one really wants to go. But sometimes we see this all the time, especially in turf racing, the pace can allow the blood to do a little bit better. And this one, also with the Judmont pedigree and Empire Maker on the bottom, might just be fine, sprinty on top with Oasis Dream up there. But I thought the 7 Sash was interesting, and one that I definitely wanted to play around with. And then I had right off Equinedge, the other runner that you mentioned, number 3, Media Blitz, was one I wanted to include just off of that. I'll call it the GSR differential in this race. I liked it 7-3. Scotty did a spread including 5, 2, 3, 6, and 11. And with that, we'll move on to race number 10. We've got the Grade 1 Bing Crosby potential Breeders' Cup Sprint. Implications in this one, especially with the Breeders' Cup being held on this very course and distance out at Del Mar, going the 6 furlongs on the dirt. And my top pick was number 2, Vertical Threat. I think this is an interesting up-and-comer that should be a good price. I see this horse, despite being drawn a little bit down inside, getting the trip that I want to get. I think should be able to get off the rail, get outside of the other speed, and get a pretty good trip. But beyond Vertical Threat, I felt like I wanted to spread with my backups. The 3 CZ Rocket is an interesting horse to talk about. There's a big narrative about this horse having gone east to be able to stay on Lasix, now running off of Lasix. And my thought on this is when something like this becomes a talking point, the horse isn't proven to be bad off of Lasix. He just never tried it in any of his races. If this becomes a big talking point and everybody starts to doubt CZ Rocket, who's the form and figure horse in many ways, who should be the best one late, if you end up getting somehow 3-1 on this horse, even 5-2 on this horse, I'm definitely going to want as a backup, because the horse makes all the sense in the world. If they come for the horse and the horse is 6-5, I'll be looking elsewhere. The 8, Dr. Shival, I thought looked really strong on the Equine Edge stuff. This horse has come back really strong at 3. Another I did not want to get beat by. And then I had the idea of the 6, Collusion Illusion, also as a backup. If the 3 doesn't fire, if CZ Rocket doesn't fire, I think Collusion Illusion could be the best closer. And this horse also, to me, just looking over the EE stuff, very strong in terms of strength of rates and the GSR. So I was a little bit interested in the 6 as well. So the 2 is my main thought with the 3, 8, and 6 as backups. What do you think, Scotty?
Well, Collusion Illusion is that's a Mark Ladd horse, but so is Dr. Shival. So he's got 2 of them in there. And, you know, I'm looking at this right now, like I'm going on the fly right now. Now, Collusion Illusion has an 80 GSR, been in 3 wins and 5 tries at the distance of 6 furlongs on the dirt, and been facing tough competition. So I think the 6 has to be looked at. Dr. Shival is the up and coming horse, right? Only 5 lifetime races. And this one is won 3 straight races in a row. Barely won last time out in that optional claiming for 62.5 at Santa Anita. Now, that was off of a layoff, probably needed the race, but I think I'm going to single Collusion Illusion. That's where I'm going to go. That being said, I recognize that Brickyard Ride could be tough. I'm going to go against CZ Rocket. I don't like that horse losing that race. I know it was a sloppy track over at Lone Star, but I don't like that horse losing a grade 3 and then coming over here against these top horses, grade 1 field. I'm not sure if this horse is the same horse that he was last year. He is 7 years old, maybe getting long in the tooth. Still a great horse, but and really had a good run there. But we'll see. But losing that grade 3 as the big favorite kind of threw me off. So Collusion Illusion with the top GSR, I'm going to go with the 6. I'm going to single that.
I get it. I will say that was not even just your normal sloppy track, though. That was fairly biblical that day at Lone Star, as I recall. So I know what you're saying. A lot of times when a good horse and the next figure looks like that, the market sometimes doesn't appreciate how much they might be tailing off. So I hear what you're saying, but I'm just going to let the price be the guide. But in terms of my bigger picks, I think I'll feel silly if we get one of our other clever ideas in and CZ Rocket wins. So at least a backup for me, but we'll go head to head a little bit in that one. Let's
All
talk
right.
about race number 11, 3 and up Calbred Allowance types going 1 mile on the turf. Scotty, how are we going to get paid?
So I'm looking at this race right now, and I'm like, do I add Bench Judge the 13, right? Because I'm looking at this, stretching out, went 5 furlongs last time out, but does draw the 13 hole. This horse has some tactical speed when he breaks good. But that 13 hole, if you think about how wide that is here, I'm looking at this right now, and I think I have to play against it just from that perspective. So I just eliminated that horse. Now I'm regenerating right now. And based on that, it's using the 2 and the 7. And I like that. I'm okay with that because I'm going to go with the GSR horses, and they're good numbers. The 7, not so much. The 7, Constant Conflict, is the Scotty top pick. This one, stretching out, has really done nothing wrong in the first 2 lifetime races. Flavian Pratt, Peter Erton, they're 8-1 on the morning line, but on the EE morning line, they're 7-2. So we'll go there, and then we'll come back with who I probably would make my top pick, Carmelita's Way. The 2 horse for Dean Peterson, Abel Cedillo, who watch Abel Cedillo and him and Juan Hernandez. They're going to have good meets. They already are having good meets, but they'll do well. But I do think that Carmelita's Man, in a very, very wide open race, when your top win percentage for EE is 15% on the 2 horse Carmelita's Man, you know it is a tough race. And sometimes you got to take a chance. So if I'm looking at that horse, been in the money in 3 of the 4 races at 8 furlongs on the turf, good post, can sit a good trip. And, you know, they've been putting the rail a little bit wide too, so you need to be somewhat tactical over there at on the turf course at Del Mar. So I'm going to go with the 2 horse Carmelita's Man and the 7 Constant Conflict.
2-7 to close it out for Scotty. We'll see what happens with the scratches as we get closer. There are the 2 AEs in this race, Bench Judge being the second of them. So, you know, 50-50, maybe a little less to even make the field. But I think that's interesting what you were saying about the ability to eliminate horses. Let's explain to folks, before I give my thoughts on this one, what you're talking about there. So there's a ticket-generating feature within Equinedge. So it'll help you with your betting as well. And you can rely fully on the algorithm, or you can make it a case of man plus machine and go in there and tell it, I definitely want to use certain horses. I definitely don't want to use certain horses. Is that, explain a little bit more about how that elimination works vis-a-vis the ticket generator. And very soon, we haven't talked about this production meeting in the middle of the show, something we do around here a lot, Scotty. We should do a little more, like an evergreen straight up product demo over on the YouTube channel that we can show folks exactly what some of this stuff looks like to help them along. Give me your thoughts on how you're using those horse eliminations.
All right. So the ticket generator has 10 different algorithms. One of the algorithms is looking for the horse most likely to be second. One, the horse most likely to be third, right? These are the types of different algorithms. And depending on your wager type and the amount you play, it'll use these different algorithms and combinations of each other. So if next to the saddle cloth of and the name of the horse, if you eliminate, so there's an I next to a horse, so you can eliminate a horse and you click on it. And when you do that, you don't have to look at that horse anymore, right? What I do when I eliminate horses, I'll see 2% chance of winning. And then I'll look at the Equinedge morning line. It says 30-1, instant elimination. I don't have to take the time to handicap that horse. I don't have to look at it. And so I think it helps me focus more because I'm not looking at 12 horses anymore. Maybe by the time I'm done with my eliminations, I've got 5 horses that I think are contenders. Well, that saves a lot of time. But here's the key. I can do it with confidence, knowing that 2 different algorithms in that case, both said 30-1 on the EE morning line, 2% chance of winning. The chance of a horse like that winning are so rare when you have 2 different algorithms that agree. And then what if the GSR was low on the horse as well? Just an easy elimination. The other thing that happens is the ticket generator cannot use any of these types of horses when you eliminate them. So if you do a really good job of elimination, then you have a really good chance of winning. The other day, a friend of mine, he was playing at Gulfstream Park and he had a really big pick 6. And the reason he did that was the system, he played $100 and the system had 4 horses in the first leg. And he happened to get a tip on one of the horses the system used, the one horse. So he forced the system to single that one instead of using 4 horses. So then what he did was he singled the horse. He locked the race, so you can lock that leg. So the first leg of the pick 6, he locked it and pressed regenerate. And based on his $100 budget, it regenerated and added horses to some of the other legs. And he ended up on that $100 ticket winning $3,600. So that's a way. So the great point about this is that you're still handicapping. It doesn't stop you from handicapping, and it's still subjective. And that's what we're trying to accomplish here is these are just tools. That's all they are.
You can handicap the races that you like, places and spots you've had historical success or a horse you have a note on. You can go pure human being, paper handicapper, old school. And then there's these spread races, these races you have less of an opinion, you defer to the computer. And that's reminds me of the great Garry Kasparov line that Tony Joe said on these airwaves a long time ago, that the future is not man versus machine, it's man plus machine. And Equinedge gives you the tools to be the cybernetic piece of that. Let me just give my thoughts on the last race here quickly. Scotty, I've obviously been spending a lot of time with the tool because I did have both the 2 and the 7 in the mix. But my top pick was going to be number 5 in this spot, Trevor T, who I thought had a chance to be the best horse late, even though coming back from a pretty long playoff, I thought might have enough tactical speed to get position in front of the deep closers and get the jump on them. But this is a race where I could see the pace hotting up and it playing to an off the pace type like this. Trevor T for me, as well as Constant Conflict and the other runner you mentioned, the number 2 horse in the finale at Del Mar for me. Any closing thoughts, Scotty, on this card? Obviously, we want to remind folks about the chance to watch the special show you've got next week for the Manitoba Derby. But anything else exciting coming up that folks should be paying attention to?
You know, I would probably just, you know, suggest that maybe you watch the simulcast with me and John Lees. It goes off about an hour before each first post time at Del Mar. I think there's some really good information there. Also, you know, subscribe to Equine Edge for free. And then you can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, Equine Edge. And in doing that, you'll get notifications of my shows. And I'm doing shows 9:30 a.m. Pacific every day that Del Mar runs. So Thursdays through Sundays, the rest of the way, except for the NHC. I'll be out there, and I'm sure I'm going to see you out there, right?
I can't leave Saratoga for Travers. You know, normally I wouldn't miss it. Maybe I can phone in and be on with Steve Bick a little bit at some point over the weekend. But an August NHC, unfortunately, a bit of a non-starter in terms of my participation. But I am happy to say that I was speaking to your team the other day, and you might not even know this yet, but it looks like I might be, if you're willing, joining you for your live stream on Alabama Day, popping in and getting to say hi and go over some races with you. I'm really looking forward to being part of the Equine Edge community myself over on YouTube. I know you guys have done a really nice job creating a like-minded group of individuals and helping each other go over some of these races.
Yeah, well, 100%. Yeah, you and I had talked about doing that. So yeah, let's do that. I'm in for sure. And then, yeah, you know what we've created on our shows is the community, right? And it's just everybody, they're learning how to use the tool. We had a lot of new people on my show yesterday, and it was just really neat to say, listen, I'm new. And I'm like, well, I'm glad you told me. You got in the chat. And because when I know that, then I'll slow down and I'll explain what the GSR is as an example, or the SOR. But I think that what we're doing is, Peter, it's kind of like poker, right? What we're trying to do at Equine Edge is be able to show people how a professional like myself uses this tool, how easy it is to actually use it. It's still new, though, at the end of the day for a lot of people, right? So when you're learning something new, that's difficult. But what they're doing is they're seeing me and they're going, I can do that. The same way we watch poker once they started showing it on TV and they started showing you what the players had, right? The hands that they had. And you're like, so you become a fan of these people, right? And then you find your favorite player, and then you kind of watch the way they play, and you're like, I can play like that, and you start learning. Well, I think we're creating a new generation of force players, and I've seen a lot of poker players, and I've seen a lot of sports bettors that are using Equine Edge, and they don't know any other tools. They just started playing horse racing, and they're like, I can do that. And we're creating an amazing community. The chat is great, and that's at 9:30 Pacific, Thursdays through Sundays.
I like that idea. We don't really have an equivalent, a full equivalent of what you would call hand analysis in poker. And one of the reasons online poker players get so good so fast is not only that ability to play a lot of hands, but to go back and look at them. And that's another cool thing to mention, actually, about the tool, that you're watching the races. Let's say you didn't get to play Saratoga on a Thursday. Once the race is official, you'll see the payouts and the listed 1, 2, 3 up at the top of the screen. One thing I've been doing just for fun is going back and looking at, just through the lens of the Equine Edge tool, after a race is over, and just seeing, looking at the winner, or looking at a long shot that ran in the money, and then going back and looking at the Equine Edge PPs and seeing if there was anything I missed in terms of the tool. And it's it's not magic. It's not every time. It's horse racing. Chaos happens. But there have been plenty of times, you know, especially regarding those two tools that we've mentioned 16 times in the show, the strength of race and the genetic strength rating, where you'll see, oh, okay, yeah, that this one makes sense on the tool, and it enables you to gain confidence and get better faster. So I love that idea of the little chart appearing in the top of the screen once the race is over.
Yeah, and you know, we've got Ticket Book coming soon as well, right? So you're going to be able to save your ticket. So whenever you do a ticket generator and you generate a ticket, you're going to save that thing, and then you'll be able to monitor it, and it'll let you know how you're doing each race, who won the race, and then you'll be able to keep track of your statistics, like how do I do at Del Mar? How have I done from this period of time to this period of time? And am I better at pick threes? That's coming in a couple of weeks. So we're going to have the Ticket Book, which is going to take the site to a much different level. And then soon we're going to start adding budgets, and it'll help you and recommend budgets and how to manage your money properly, so you can have longevity in the sport. So there's a lot of things we're doing, and the team is doing at Equine Edge, to really make the sport better and help it grow.
I love it. Thank you, Scotty. Appreciate your insights today regarding the product. And we'll look for you on the Del Mar simulcast feed. And we'll remind folks one more time, free month of Equine Edge, best deal out there for the product. In terms of a promo code, it's free money, or go to equinedge.com/free money. I'll pop that up in the show notes as well. Make it easy for everybody. Scotty, we'll see you on TV.
All right, we'll see you. Thanks, Peter.
Once I master this whole being in two places at once thing, I'm going to get down to Monmouth Park to do another Friday night of Twilight Racing. First post at 5 o'clock. The vibes are good down there on the Jersey Shore. And I wish I could be there more often than I am. And I look forward to getting back once we get back downstate, taking that boat ride down, then paying attention to Monmouth, watching the simulcast and having it on the radar up here at Saratoga. But I'd really like to go and check it out in person once again as soon as I can. Also want to remind folks about their Win Early Pick 5. You can win early and win often with this bet. First five races on Saturday and Sunday. And it starts early, 12:15 on a typical day. The first post, you'll get the first two races at Monmouth before Saratoga even starts. So why not start building your bankroll down at the shore? To learn more about one of my favorite tracks, check out monmouthpark.com. Next up in the show, happy to be joined by our man that we reach out to when it comes to all things Woodbine. Going to be getting a double dose of him with video this weekend, or maybe not with video, but with audio this weekend, because we'll do a special show with the good racing they have at Woodbine on Sunday. Lots of Queen's Plate prep action as we're getting on to that point in the season. The Queen's Plate rescheduled from its normal June date out to September, and there's a prep and the Oaks both on Sunday. We'll cover that separately. Here today to talk about the late pick four on Saturday's card, I'm speaking, of course, of from InTheMoneyPodcast.com, Drew Cotney. Drew, what's up?
Hey, I'm good. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. We're going to have a little extra Woodbine coverage, too. Sean Tugel and I are going to do a baby talk covering. We're going to do two of those this weekend. Lots of extra stuff this weekend, because and we'll cover the baby races in a little bit more detail. Did you just look at the last four, or did you happen to look at this first stake at Woodbine today?
I didn't look at the first stake at Woodbine today. I glanced and I didn't have a strong opinion, so didn't want to dwell on anything without a strong opinion.
No, that makes sense. And I imagine if you look a little bit more and a stronger opinion does develop, you'll be covering that in your written analysis over on the website. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also we have the horses to watch. That yesterday we had a good one come back at 10-1.
I saw that.
It was Anita Grigio that just failed to fire the last out, and that second off of our horses to watch list got the job done at quite a good price.
What was your note on that one? Simply that you felt like it was an effort off the bench that could be forgiven because of the length of the layoff and the trainer stepped second off, or was there something in that Anita Grigio last run that you had liked?
Yeah, Anita Grigio had gotten rated accidentally, right? Got shuffled into the rail and trapped and just was rating. And that horse doesn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Two back, which would be the second off the bench, just didn't fire at all. And I thought that was a little strange. And the market overreacted and said this one has no shot in winning at what is essentially a little lighter of a condition that one faced two back. So third off of the bench got the job done on the lead, cozy trip, all those things. So you got away with a heck of a price there at 10-1 when some of the other horses at 3-1 were a little head scratchers of how that money attracted there.
We got a whole other show on this network where we're supposed to do some red boarding. Hopefully you'll be a guest with Spencer on Red Board Rewind. No, it's not your fault. I invited it, but I just wanted to get a little plug in for Spencer and Red Board Rewind. He's got Matt Bagvolgi on the new show, and you should definitely check that out. And then we'll get in the other plug for that Horses to Watch list. This is a free service. When possible, we're going to be having races from Woodbine. I imagine you'll catch up. You missed last week. I imagine you'll probably catch up with a horse or two next week. But we've got Woodbine, Eric Solomon, who we had the pleasure of hanging with at the Paddock Bar the other day. He's doing a great job with the Monmouth horses to watch. I've kicked in one or two, and Nick Tamaro has been helping out as well. Absolutely free. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/email. Sign up for our absolutely free newsletter and check that out as well. So let's dive into the four races we're meant to be talking about today. We don't have a ton of time. We've got a little bit of a tight schedule, but we'll make it work. We will start off with stakes action in race number 8. We've got the Victoria Stakes for the 2-year-old colts going 5.5 on the synthetic. I'll let you kick this one off, Drew.
Yeah, I'm very uncreative here. And the number six one-timer feels like has to take all the money and could be 1-5 at the end of the day based on both the time form and the buyer speed figure that we see in our DRF formulator PPs. I watched the replay over at Arlington, and my goodness, that was a good run-in. So we know that Arlington's a little sometimes lower on the class level, but both of those runners out of that race have produced winners, earning in the mid-60s buyers, which I think dominates this field here. So I'm using the A as number six one-timer, which is appropriately named for the Canadians in hockey, and the number four, 24 Mamba, as a B. It just feels like there's a lot of speed in these younger races. You can tend to see at these shorter distance a little bit more of a pace collapse up a Woodbine. So I'm going to use that one to sit in stock and maybe clunk up there to get it. I expect that price to go longer than 3-1. I could see 5-1 because I think one timer is going to just take all the money in this one.
I think you're right, to the point where I'm willing to question the Arlington Park form enough and use one timer more as a backup. I put the 7 Feel the Beat on top. This one comes out strong on a few of the different Equine Edge metrics we've talked about. I thought we'd get a good stalking trip from the outside and had a chance to make a little bit of noise in the spot. And then you mentioned the other one that I was interested in. I said the 8. I said the 7 Feel the Beat. Feel the Beat is the 8. So I'll correct that one straight away. But then also the 424 Mamba. I thought you made the case already, but strong late finish, one that could benefit if things start coming apart from the seams late. And I'm not going to cut off my nose to spite my face. I will have some one-timer number six with my strongest opinions elsewhere. Let's talk about race number 9, 3 and up filly and mare allowance types going 7 furlongs on the turf. I was very impressed visually and on the clock with the run that number 7, Scatter the Clouds, put in on debut. Might have been flattered a little bit that it was fast early, but this runner came home so well late. I was expecting that she is going to move forward once again. Scatter the Clouds for me in race number 9. How did you see it, Drew?
Yeah, I have that one as a bad favorite, and I'll give you some explanation in a second. So I'm on the number 2 Gray Seal. As there looks to be no pace signed on in this race, and I think this one could get the easiest of trips with the inside draw and second off for a trainer who has half of her runners hitting the board at the meet right now out of 52. So the number 2 Gray Seal is going to be ready to run, wouldn't leave off any verticals, and will be my A for the horizontals. My backup is going to be the number 8 Say Hey at 20-1. It couldn't really be anything because last out was just a workout. The jockey spotted the field and rated this one out of the race, handwritten down the lane. And I'm just going to say that was, let's get ready. Let's see what we're dealing with here. So the number 8, Say Hey, I think has a little bit of an intrigue to me to say, hey, I'm going to bet you. Hey, how about that pun? So the number 7, Scattered Clouds, though, I have a trip note here that said Dream Ride saving all the ground with the pace flow where every logical horse ran into trouble in that race. So I tend to see this a lot happen where you get a good number, like we just talked about with one-timer, where you earn a great figure in the maiden ranks, graduate, and all of a sudden the competition steps up. I agree, had a great running down the lane, but I just think with a little adversity today, being drawn in the middle of the field, this one's not going to get as easy of a trip. So I'm against the number 7, and my A is the number 2, and back with number 8.
2A for you, 7 for me. We go head-to-head in that spot with Scatter the Clouds. We'll see how it all shakes out on the racetrack on Saturday. Now we move on to race number 10. We've got 3 and up maidens with a whole lot of money in the pot. Interesting distance here, going 1 1/8 on the synthetic. Who do you like in this spot, my friend?
Yeah, the number 3, Blast and Snow. The horse ran, I think, an amazing debut race, except for those couple bumps in the deep stretch that got this one DQ'd. I think should get an even better trip this time and has enough quicken around those turns to make it into the race. And I was just really impressed when turning for home, number 3, Blast in Snow, was able to make up a lot of good ground and be tactical around that turn, and should be even better going a little bit longer. I think also the kind of backup logical is the number 7, Truffle King. Other than Figures Fit has run into some issues. I mean, maybe it's getting, the act is getting a little old, but third off the bench, let's see if we can get that one done. Maybe the little bit longer is what's needed for number seven, Truffle King.
As much as we disagreed in the last race, we agree here. I had it all about the three, Blast in the Snow. I think a good trip will be expected. You like a horse that's already won a race, essentially, going against maidens. The extra eighth feels like it will be a plus. And as you pointed out, moved into the fastest part of that race last time. So I do have some reservations about the Scatter the Clouds in the previous race, that that might have been a setup. I don't think it was a particularly great setup for Blast in the Snow last time. I think it can definitely be poised to move forward in this spot. Race number 11 is our nightcap. Three and up filly and mares, maidens. Gosh, if you like maidens and two-year-olds, you definitely want to be playing this Saturday Woodbine card. Here we have seven furlongs on the turf. Drew, how are we going to get paid?
Yeah, I've been going back and forth on a couple of horses this morning before you called. I'm going to go with my best value. I actually just changed it because sometimes I'll look at a race like what we saw with number nine, I'm Not Perfect, and number one, Carrick Beauty. Obviously, Carrick Beauty outperformed I'm Not Perfect. Heads above. Best, but we're going back to the turf, and number nine has even better figures on the turf than the number one Carrick Beauty, right? We can overanalyze that till we're blue in the face, but we're getting double the price. So I'm on the number nine, I'm Not Perfect, because last out was chasing the speeds as wide as possible and got stuck in that merry-go-round pace while being kind of the lone runner to make up any significant ground and still has a chance to get the job done today. The number one, Carrick's Beauty, almost fits that bill to the T. We'll be able to make up ground late. Had a bit of trouble. So I'm on the nine and the one as A's, and we'll also be using A's as the number two, Rum Raisin, gets back to the right surface, better post draw, has speed, and the number 14, Murray, I think is how we'll say that. Bit of a trip last back, two back too fast, three back off the break was a bit too short. So today gets the jockey change, a little bit more race luck. It is a wide post, but you're going to get paid at 15 to 1 with the number 14. So in order, it's 9-1-2-14.
All right. I'll list those all out. As you didn't mention the one I have, that number 10, Oversock, who I think has moved into back pace, two starts in a row, and has chance to get a much better trip here, especially maybe a little bit more of an even gallop. About, I just want to ostracize in this spot. I'll take another look at your four that you mentioned as potential backups, and that certainly is number 14, Murray, for the fantastic neighborhood in Paris. I would have pegged you as a man who'd spent some time in Paris and wouldn't have struggled pronouncing Murray. Drew, what did I get wrong?
I drank Maximator when I was in Paris, and that was when I was 18 years old, and it was about a 9% beer. That was about all we could afford. So there you go. No, I need to get back there and drink some good wine out there. So, yeah, I think this race is going to be a great value race, and you'll get paid at the end of the day here.
I suggest Arc Week. You can go. Basically, each of the Paris tracks has a race meeting that week. When we went, gosh, I'm going to guess 2006. Frank Scatoni and I did a trip over there, did a different course every day, and then hit up the Arc. Saw Hurricane Run win the Arc. It was a great, great week of racing. The only problem is it's such a huge weekend of racing in the States too. You miss a lot of Breeders' Cup prep action, but the Arc is a trip that should be on every horse player's bucket list. That's for sure. All right, buddy, we're going to let you go, and we're going to throw it to a break, and we'll come back with our final segment. But Drew, we won't miss you too long because you'll be back on Sunday.
Let's do it. Good luck.
Last but not least, not even at all close to least, we bring in a returning guest to the show who you know from the television work he does up here and on the Gulfstream simulcast feed. Just one of the all-around most interesting analysts, as far as I'm concerned, for the trip work he does, the race design, all that good stuff. He's also a founding member of the Degenerate Doubleheader, which will ride again hopefully next week. We'll talk if that's confirmed or not. I'm speaking, of course, of Brian Natto. Brian, what's going on, buddy?
PTF, good to see you, as always. Yeah, I think we're good for next week. So always looking forward to that. And week three at Saratoga, where does it all go up here, right?
First 2 weeks go pretty okay for you?
Yeah, it was actually very, very, very good. It took me 40 days to hit a pick five slash pick six last year. literally. And I was 3 for 3 in the first 3 days of the meet. So.
Oh, that's tremendous. That's tremendous. So you were in party mode when I saw you on opening day. That's what you're telling me.
I saw you opening day, Pete.
We both have baseball themed shirts on today. I've got my 52 tops, Jackie Robinson.
Love that shirt.
I'm very pleased with this one. Brian rocking the Mets regalia. Huge news in the baseball world yesterday with the fantasy baseball like trade with the Dodgers getting Scherzer and Trey Turner. Like, we needed another reason to root against these guys, Brian.
Yeah, the only positive about that is, you know, the Mets still have 11 games with the Nationals, who have just completely punted on the season. So that's cool. And I guess Scherzer didn't want to come to New York, Mets or Yankees. He had that 10-5 that he could, you know, waive any trade. So good riddance to those guys, Trey Turner, a Mets killer. Maybe could the Braves trade Austin Riley, maybe get him the heck out of the division. But, you know, we'll see what happens today. Obviously, the 4 o'clock deadline with the trade. I mean, you know, the Mets are potentially trading for 3 or 4 all-stars in the next week. You know, Carrasco makes his first start today. DeGrom's coming back. Apparently Noah Syndergaard's alive. So Lindor will be coming back. So, you know, I'm not one of those guys, Pete, that, you know, is going to sit here and get all hot and bothered if we don't make a trade. If they do, play a little poker and let the price come down at 4 o'clock, that's fine. If not, you know, we've been in first place for like 83 days, so could be worse.
It's true. I mean, it feels – I'm not overly confident in the Mets, but, I mean, it's a question of who else is running in the race. And the Nationals completely checked out. Obviously, the Acuna news – change the Braves season. I'm just not sure who's going to run the Mets down at this point. Am I going to get struck by lightning for saying that?
No, I think you're 100% right. And you know, everybody wants to poo-poo the Mets and say, well, they should have a bigger lead. All right, that might be the case, but you know, the Mets have trotted out TBD at about 12 times this year. And about 12 times this year they've had TBD as their starting pitcher at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, sometimes people don't like to look at both sides of the coin. And to be 4 or 5 up in the loss column as we turn to August, it's like the gambler, Pete. It's like, you know, we hit that pick 5 for 5 grand, but boy, we could have hit it for 10 grand. You know, we've always got something to complain about, but you know, it wasn't too long ago where the Mets were horrific and our season was over on Belmont Stakes Day pretty much every year. So
if not Memorial Day,
too. So I am not going to complain. It's going to be a fun last 2 months. And the other thing too, is, you know, we're built for postseason. We're built for short series. You know, you get DeGrom, you get Stroman, you get, well, Walker's been and if Cookie Carrasco comes back and is good, that's a playoff starting rotation right there. So I'll take my chances there.
Fingers crossed. Where have you been watching the games? Mostly at home, or do you watch them out of town?
Yeah, my parents during the week and my buddy Bry's on the weekends, you know. So mostly at my parents and then wherever. Downtown's been a weird kind of vibe this year. As much as it's great to have everything back up and running in Copacetic and Saratoga, downtown has been a mob scene this year. So kind of a little bit of here, there, and everywhere feel to it, if I can Beatles revolver-esque with us here.
We love that. We'll take any Beatles reference we can get around here. You know that. If people are wondering where I've been watching the games, or I haven't, I've been listening while studying form, pretty much sitting out here in the office in the old degenerate flop house. It would be fun to get out and watch some games at some point. We'll try to make the magic happen at some stage. Let's talk about this pick six on Saturday, though, Brian. It starts off in race number 6, 3:55 p.m. This thing kicks off. And we'll be doing more on this race over on Baby Talk with our Gainesway Farm sponsored show with Sean Tugel. We'll do a deep dive on some of these pedigrees. But I had a trip horse that I had, I think, even mentioned in our free newsletter that we had talked about earlier in the show with Drew Cotney. So I usually kick to the guest right away, but I'll mention this one. Number 7, 02035. This horse, I think, was on a whole lot of horse to watch lists after that impressive run on debut at what almost had to be an inadequately short distance, given we're dealing with a colt by a Belmont winner in Union Rags out of a Galileo mare. More ground today and might just roll against this group. I was going to use the 12 Accretive and number one Sweeping Giant as potential backups. But I was planning on making a wager on number seven, 02035, to kick things off. How do you see it?
Well, I'm glad we're doing this too, because as you know, you and I really haven't talked a lot about it, but I felt like the return of the dollar pick six up here this summer would be a really good thing. It has just blown past that. I mean, they're getting $200,000 a day. It's craziness. So that's super cool. It might get $250,000. I think they did that last Saturday on a non-carryover day. So it's a great bet. I was very interested as you were talking there, Pete, because I kind of wanted to fade this horse a little bit. I mean, you mentioned the pedigree, 42-1 on debut, but you know, out of a Galileo mare, and they only pay $20,000. Union Rags goes for $30,000. So I didn't think that was a great sign. Completely DOB on debut. Obviously, you know, the run on debut was strong, and you alluded to it. 6 furlongs is certainly not what a Union Rags out of a Galileo mare wants to do. But I don't know. I was just, you know, if the money shows in the Pletchers, and that's the one Sweeping Giant and the 4 Royal Spirit, I'd be apt to just use both of them. Use 0235 as a B and be done with it. The one is out of Isabella Sings, who's a multiple graded stakes winner on the turf. I think 3 grade threes and a grade two. We're going to save all the ground. I love that 7 furlong work. I have not gotten the workout reports yet. It's a little early for that. But I just love seeing a 7 furlong work right on debut. And then the 4 Royal Spirit, who's got IRAD, you can make of that what you will. Joel rides the 1, IRAD rides the 4. But, you know, the dam here was a half debutician, Mo Tom, who did good things for Rapoli and Pletcher, as well as Red Ruby. So both of these horses have a lot of pedigree. If the money shows, and I would think your horse will be favored and maybe comfortably so, but as long as the 1 and the 4 aren't dead on the board, Pete, I was kind of maybe just going to battle with those two and letting the 7 beat me and using the 7 as a backup. The rest of these really didn't inspire, you know, maybe limited liability next time for Shug with a little tightener. Other than that, there wasn't a lot going on with the rest of these that made me want to get involved.
I definitely see the case on the Pletchers. And that, I mean, that's a good point. For me, once they've run, I will typically not worry so much about the sale info. But mm-hmm. if this horse gets hellaciously overbet, sometimes you can look back at the price they were last time versus this time, and you can use that as signal in both directions. I'm always inclined to give an extra look to a horse that was favored the last time, even at, you know, I'll look for extra reasons why maybe it was a non-effort, and you're sort of doing the opposite in a way. And, you know, I had sort of made up my mind when they crossed the wire in that race that I was going to bet this horse next time. So I'm going that way. But your approach is equally valid, and one of us will be right. That's the best part.
We hope.
When it comes to race number 6. Yeah, I guess like an almost kind of good run for mine, and we get beat by some horse that neither of us mentioned. We could both still be wrong, but we'll see how it plays out in race number 6. And then we'll move on to race number 7, where we've got an allowance race for 3 and up fillies and mares going a mile on the turf. Brian, we'll let you kick this one off.
Yeah, this was the one where I was hoping for a little chaos, Pete, because, you know, yeah, Love and Thunder is going to be favored, and she looks fine for Chad, but you know, we're still just week 3. What is that? The 10th or 11th day of the meet. And, I don't know, Pete, these brown runners aren't running again. I don't know. They didn't really run a lot last year at the meet. You know, he won his races. Don't get me wrong, but, I thought the horses as a whole underperformed. And so far, you know, early on, a quarter of the way through the meet, that they don't seem to be overwhelming to me either. So yes, I think you have to use Love and Thunder, and maybe you could argue she's the most likely winner. But you know, if you look at the sheets and stuff, she's running 8s just like every other gal in this field. And so I was looking at Rivendell down inside. You know, her best run to me in her career, it wasn't her best finish, but you look at that run at a mile on the inner right here at Saratoga in her second lifetime start, and right away off a maiden, you know, debut win, which doesn't happen a lot for Bill Mott. She's got to step up and face winners. I thought she ran fine that day. She hasn't routed, gone 2 turns since. Now we go second off a little bit of a layoff, comes right back, which I think is a positive sign too. Bill Wheels are right back on 15 days rest. And I think Rivendell's going to save all the ground down inside. She's tactical enough to work out a nice trip, and she's going to be a price. So I like her in here. As I mentioned, certainly Love and Thunder. You've got to use Secret Time off the trainer change to Danny Gargan, and no disrespect to Arnold Delacour, but we know how good Danny is with these newcomers. He's 35%. Blinkers go on here. This filly's got graded form, so certainly Secret Time. Invincible Gal's the one, another one I'm not really sold on, but Graham adds blinkers and Lasix and, you know, the ultimate horseman with an equipment change. I do think that's positive. Maybe the blinkers tighten her up a little bit early because, you know, you don't want to be too far back, Pete, as you know, going two turns on the inner here. And then number seven, High Opinions in the mix too. This is a spread for me. As we talk about this sequence, I'm allowed to spread because I'm a lot more condensed in other spots.
We'll get there. We'll get there for sure. I actually put Invincible Gal on top. This was another one that I just had a note right after the race that I wasn't crazy about the ride, where I felt like was sort of overly taken back off a slow pace last time. I think with the blinkers, that signals we're going to get a little bit more of a positive ride. I think she can improve with a little bit different handling in this spot. You already made a great case on Secret Time. Might get the best trip out of anybody in this race as well. She's most definitely on the radar. And Love and Thunder, I'm going to keep in the mix. Ran well, I thought, closing into a slow pace. The last day might take a step forward in the third career start. I really like your case on Rivendell, and we'll be putting Rivendell into the mix as well. Bill Mott coming back that quick. I do think there's some very interesting intent with that one. So I think we both see it as a little bit spready. I'm curious how your opinions are going to narrow as we move on in the sequence, the next race of which is the Grade One Vanderbilt for three and up types, going 6 furlongs on the dirt. And this was a race I thought there were a couple of different ways you could go. Is this one of the spots where you decided you wanted to get skinny?
Yeah, absolutely, Pete. I just think at the end of the day, Mischievous Alex is way better than these horses. You know, he doesn't have to be on the lead, and you can argue what kind of actual 6 furlong sprint speed there is, but regardless, if Irad says, you know what, I'm on the best horse, maybe he'll be in front. Maybe somebody catches a flyer, ideally, and you can get right outside. The mile was probably too far for him in the Met last time. Not that he ran poorly at all, but you look at the Carter, you look at the Gulfstream races, and he's just better than this group. And, you know, there's nice horses in here, Pete, don't get me wrong. And we all love Whitmore. And how can you not root for Firenze Fire? I'm not sure at the end of the day if they're true Grade One 6 furlong sprinting horses. I know Whitmore won the Breeders' Cup Sprint, so you know that might sound idiotic. He never wins though, Pete. And you know he's running that race 4 times, and any of his other Breeders' Cup Sprints wouldn't even have hit the board with that run. But he picked the day of his life, and no one else ran in that race, literally. And he did, and now he hasn't won this year. His numbers are a little sketchy. I don't know. I'm he's another horse on this card that I'm happy if he does win and beat me, but I don't want to be there to find out. And so I thought Mischievous Alex was a lone A single move on spread in other spots that are a lot more to me wide open.
I understand the approach. I kept going back and forth on Mischievous Alex. I will probably end up using somewhere, but the horse I wanted to talk about was number 9, Special Reserve. Coming here in career form, I thought would get a very good trip, a little stalk and pounce action from the outside. And I think you and I both ended up with one strong opinion because of our shared lack of confidence in the famous horses, Whitmore and Firenze Fire. Whitmore, I mean, he's as cool as they come. This horse beats me. I tip my cap. He'll probably come running late and get a slice, but he's not exactly a winning kind. I do think that, I mean, maybe that does sound crazy. He's won plenty, but I feel like in these biggest dances in races like this, he's just far more likely to come running for a little piece, and he's going to be bet very, very heavily. And then Firenze Fire, my idea on him is that he's much more of a Belmont horse for course. I mean, he hasn't done his best work up here. Talented enough to win. Wouldn't shock me, but by any means. But I felt like the value was trying to press up the 9 and try to make a little bit of a bet on the come on this one, who I think will be a square price. But hearing your confidence in Mischievous Alex does make me want to include that one on a backup line as well. I had written it up leaving Whitmore and Firenze Fire in as Bs, but the more I think about it, I think they're more C type horses for me. Just my strongest opinions elsewhere. Let me see what can happen with the likes of Special Reserve as an A. And I'm just going to go ahead and put Mischievous Alex for my for our notes that we send out to our Plus subscribers as my lone B in this spot. And we'll come to some sort of consensus there in the grade one Vanderbilt before moving on to the grade two Jim Dandy, which goes as race number 9, a mile and an eighth on the dirt. I think a lot of people are going to have this as a one horse race, and maybe it is, and maybe you do, but I'm going to have a little bit of number 3 Weyburn on my tickets in here. And I'm probably being influenced by the Live at the Brentwood show I did a couple of weeks ago with Richard Migliori. And I'll mention that Sean Borman, professional horse player, will be our guest tomorrow. If anybody's around in town at 10:30, come by the Brentwood and listen to our act, and we'll hang out after and have a Bloody Mary and talk more about the racing day. But when Richard Migliori was on, he was just very bullish about how this horse has improved and continued to improve throughout the three-year-old season. He's been on my radar for a long time, thinking of him as the anti-post favorite for the Queen's Plate as an Ontario bred, but looking at the way the pace shakes out in here, and then my only question about Essential Quality, I mean, obviously Essential Quality is supposed to win. He is the most likely winner, but it is a little bit interesting cutting back from 12 furlongs, prepping for a race, or at least having a more important race in 4 weeks' time in the Travers going 10 furlongs. I just thought there was some world in which he's running on late. I'll have it as much as I bet on Weyburn to win. I'm also going to have, in a one-way, Essential Quality, Weyburn, exactly. I'm not anti-Essential Quality at all. I just didn't want to see it as simply as single the 2-5 and move on. Maybe I'm overthinking it. How do you see it?
Well, yeah, there's a lot going on here, right? For a race with a 1-5 favorite that's supposed to win, but if there's a time to beat them, it's in this race, right? As you alluded to, the Travers is the main goal, and Brad's not going to squeeze the lemon dry. It's a turf race, right? There's absolutely no pace whatsoever. I would think with Irad on Weyburn, and you see a lot of ones and twos in the past performances, even though he's very slow early, I would think Weyburn is the one that takes the initiative. That's positive. I don't know how good he is, Pete. I don't know if he's any good at all, to be quite honest with you, because his chance to beat Mandaloon was last time too. And he couldn't do it. And Mandaloon came back and quote unquote won the Haskell. But that was, again, very Essential Quality like in the Pegasus. This isn't the goal. If you're going to beat me, it's going to be today. He couldn't do it. And listen, the Mandaloon fan club forms behind me, but he's probably not the horse Essential Quality is. It's like a 80-20 to me, Pete, probably Essential Quality, 80-20 Masquerade, because I think he's getting pretty good for Al. He's the typical second half 3-year-old, right? That's now grown up. I saw him when he was like the worst DQ of the year at Fairgrounds this winter, but to his credit, he's grown up since then. His Derby weekend 1X was awesome, and then he backed it up in the Ohio Derby. He's got to move forward again. I mean, I don't think anything to keep me in mind. I don't think he's very good. So, you know, if your claim to fame is beating him by less than a length, you know, that's problematic when you're facing a 2-year-old champion and Belmont winner. But he seems to be on the improve for Al. And I think it's, you know, Al's not ducking anyone here. He's trying to get, you know, and this is a big race for Masquerade, whereas you kind of hinted at, it's not a big race for Essential Quality. I'm sure Brad and Godolphin, they want to win. They're giving away $600,000 here, but 4 weeks down the line is the Travers, and that's the goal. So if you're going to beat Essential Quality, this is the time to do it. So I'll use a little Masquerade. After that, I couldn't really see anyone because I'm not, like I said, I'm not sure how good Weyburn is. I want nothing to do with Keep Me in Mind, who's off Lasix, by the way. And, you know, that might be an elephant in the room, too. And Masquerade's never run off Lasix. Their Essential Quality's never run on it. And I'm sorry, that's a big deal. You know, it is. You have no idea. And you look at Keep Me in Mind, he's very, very slow. He adds Lasix in Thistle Downs, and he really blows up. And now he's off today. So, You know, it'll be interesting. Like I said, it's a turf race. It's a 2 furlong sprint off the far turn. And that's pretty good for essential quality, especially with a nice outside attack post. So, like I said, it's like 80-20. Mass Parade's not an A, but I think he's a little better than a B, at least on Saturday, July 31st.
I was going to leave him in the mix as well for a penny. And I'll tell you this about Masquerade: win, lose, or draw. Those owners from New Orleans who are up here with the McGowey brothers, they're going to be having as much fun as anybody when it comes to Saturday afternoon. Going to try to go down and see those guys today. I understand they're hanging around, and always a pleasure to say hi to the ever popular Frank McGowey and his brother Patrick, the 2-time Breeders' Cup betting challenge champion. Let's talk about race number 10. It's the grade two Bowling Green Stakes. Maybe that was a Freudian slip, Brian. I don't know. 4-year-olds and up going 1 3/8 on the turf. I shouldn't say that. Channel Maker is a legitimate grade one animal. Yeah. He might just be better than these. I'm uncreative here. I was gonna use some backups. Rock Emperor got that confidence builder. I'll have him in for a penny. Channel Cat, if for some reason Channel Maker doesn't show up, maybe Channel Cat gets the front running trip. But Channel Maker's overseas races, I mean, I forgive Dubai because obviously something just wasn't him that day. The previous run was pretty good, and he probably should have been ridden a little bit more aggressively in that spot. And again, he's the grade one horse in the grade two race for me. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if he runs, you know, back to any of those, if you know, buyers like him or not, if he runs a 108 in here, he's going to blap this field. It's very essential quality esque, though, right, Pete? I mean, we've got the Sword Dancer here in 4 weeks, and that's the big goal. That's the grade one. So, again, maybe it's the right time. He hasn't run since May Don. I thought he ran fine that day. I mean, he's Mr. Wish, you could argue, is one of the top 5 turf horses in the world, doubled up in the, you know, over there. So,
ran huge, you know, the other day too. Yeah, early. The Mishra form, the form to Mishriff is not a bad thing. I just felt like the way he went away so tamely, yeah, something was a little wrong. But then when I don't mind a bad last running line when it precedes a layoff for a horse that I have reason to believe is going to be coming back whole. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And he, if you want to be hard headed, this is the type of race, isn't it? Where it's like if you're not going to use Channel Maker, you got to use pretty much everybody because they're all the same horse. You look at this field, everybody's running 98s. Everybody's running 3s and 4s on the sheets. I probably tried to get a little cheeky with the same kind of essential quality angle. Let's beat Channel Maker today. I went with Cross Border. If nothing else, he loves this Saratoga turf course. He's 5 for 6. I just think Luis Saez is as good as any jockey in the country. He doesn't get the credit. He doesn't ride for the outfits that some of these other guys do, and he's just awesome. And this horse is going to save, you know, he's going to be inside on all 3 turns. I think that's, don't overlook that. You know, some nice horses here could be out wide on 3 turns here. Mike Maker going long on the turf. This horse is a major player. He won this race via DQ last year, but you know, he fits with these on paper. And again, if Channel Maker's not quite ready with his A game, Cross Border is definitely there. And then I went a little out, you know, Moon Over Miami is, I don't know how good he is. That Man of War that Channel Cat won was such a weird race because Channel Cat ran like the race of the year, but you know, he came back and didn't fire in the Manhattan, and they were so far, he was so far clear of the rest of these horses. You see Moon Over Miami was 15 lengths back. You see Sham Rocket was 11 lengths back. It was just a weird race. And I don't think Channel Maker will let Channel Cat get that far up front. So I was kind of okay with fading Channel Cat. Moon Over Miami and that Pan American at Gulfstream had a huge number that day. Can he get back to it? Is it an anomaly? I'm not sure, but I want a little bit of him in here. And I don't know. All of a sudden, Rock Ember is going to win 2 races in a row. Not for me. Breakpoint seems second tier for Chad. I'm okay trying to play against Channel Cat. Red Knight's not this kind, right? He's not a grade two, and it's probably a little short for him as well. Maybe a little Sham Rocket, but I'm not sure he's this kind either. So I was maybe okay, Pete, just going 2-5 to the hoop and being done with it.
All right. I was going to mention the seven. You talked well enough about the seven. I was thinking about including as a backup.
As a backup, you? Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that. Let's talk about running out of time here a little bit, Brian, but we've got just got one race left. It is race number 11, our nightcap, claiming types, three-year-olds and up, 1 1/16 miles on the turf. How are we going to get paid, my friend?
I came back to Morocco on the drop for Safi. He does a very good job spotting his horses. Yes, he claimed him for 50. Now he's in for a quarter, but Pete, they're running for 55,000. I mean, you get claimed and you win, you're out. It's fine. Vittori Kin's got the class with the numbers on the drop. He'll save all the ground. And Hieroglyphics, you know, Hieroglyphics was entered for 40 on Thursday. Now he's in for a quarter. I just think Dominic Schettino's got a horse ready to run, and Dominic quietly does a very good job. Yeah, can he improve off Mike Maker? I don't know. That's a big ask, but Dominic does a good job. This horse has got numbers. He's got form. He's got class. I think he's a major player, too. I'd probably roll with those three and then some backups with the 7 and the 10 as well. But I'd be okay with using just those three.
One of your backups is the main one I wanted. That's number 10, Sharp Prospect. I thought improved significantly in the first start as a gelding and could prove best of speed in a race on the turf that doesn't have much of it. I think the outside post maybe pushes their hand there. And, you know, Saez, as you mentioned, I love him, especially on speed.
Very aggressive.
And so I really like Sharp Prospect in this spot. I was going to take a little bit of a shot at a price with one you didn't mention, the 6 Bird's Eye View, yep, who I felt like looking at closing sectionals. It doesn't look like there's enough speed to set it up for this horse. But if the price is big enough, looking at sectionals, dropping in from allowance ranks, maybe Bird's Eye View can get a piece at a price, probably more for underneath, but I'll use for a penny on top. And I thought was at least an interesting one to talk about. And then you made the case for number 8, Hieroglyphics, a great fit at this level and should improve, I think, in this spot. So for me, I liked it 10-6-8. Brian had it 3-1-8 on top with the 7 and the 10 as backups. If folks are interested in getting little digests of all the picks we do here on the free shows, check out our In the Money Plus service. We also do extra podcast content there, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus, to check that out. Closing thought from you, Brian, before we get out of here?
No, I mean, it's just a great weekend at Saratoga. I mean, we talked about the Vanderbilt and the Jim Dandy, and, you know, the grade one Vanderbilt's not even the feature. And you see a two-year-old champion and a Belmont winner, three champions on the card as well on Saturday. The weather looks to be great. I think the rain's out of it. You know, nice calm temperatures. I can't wait. It's going to be a hell of a Saturday.
Going to be a big weekend up here. Thank you, my friend. We'll see you over there.
Sounds good, PTF. Later.
We're so happy this year, once again, to be partnering with two local businesses that I love. We'll start by talking about the Brentwood, mentioned earlier in the show, doing the shows on Saturdays at 10:30. Come join us. Love to get to meet listeners and viewers and plus members in person. Brentwood's a great place to do that over a Bloody Mary, maybe with a little small beer chaser. That's been my preferred tipple on a Saturday morning so far. This week's guest, Sean Borman. It's also a fantastic place to stay. I absolutely love the rooms there. You know you're in Saratoga. You hear the clippity-clop of horses walking by. You're right across from the 7-furlong chute. Great place to have a quiet cocktail as well. The Brentwood offers so much. To learn more about them, Brentwood-Hotel.com will get you there. Make sure to check that out, the Brentwood Hotel in Saratoga. And while you're in Saratoga, get your cocktail on over at the Brentwood. If it's beer that you're interested in or coffee, I'm going to suggest that you check out Walt and Whitman. The coffee shop, the cafe, is upstairs. Good little nibbles, excellent coffee, some of the best in town for sure. But downstairs in the tavern, that's where I'm really into. It's got a really cool decor, very music themed. You know how near and dear to my heart that is. And most important of all, the beer is excellent. Was drinking one of their Time is Money Helles Lagers with a little bit of oak aged flavor going on, but very light, sessionable beer. Had that at Horse Player Happy Hour. That was excellent. Got into one of their hoppier beers as well, some sort of single hop IPA with the Vic Secret hop that was also delicious. Pretty much whatever style of beer you're interested in, you're going to find it at Walt Whitman, along with great snacks. And I want folks to check this place out and tell them we sent you. In fact, to learn more about them, go to their website. Walt and Whitman is the name of the business, and hopefully we'll see you over there. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. We'd like to thank today's guests, Scotty McKeever, Drew Coatney, and of course, Brian Natto. Great to get to talk to that lot. want to thank our founding partners, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation and 10 Strike Racing. Been so cool having Marshall Graham of 10 Strike here all meet. And we got to see Clay Sanders last weekend. He's back this weekend, apparently. Going to hopefully get a chance to talk about all things regarding the purple and black. And as far as the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation goes, lots of stuff coming up with them. Gumbo Night, August 11th, Michael Baychuk, Frank Brightson flying in from New Orleans to make the gumbo. Beer by Artisanal here in town. Going to be a ton of fun out at Mora's Simply Food is the location as of this moment out on Maple Avenue. Anyway, trfinc.org/players. That's the place to go. Check out all the details on the gumbo night, on the upcoming barbecue at the barn later in the summer, and also that whiskey you see behind me. Actually, that's the old whiskey. We got a new whiskey that you can check out the details of as well. Support us by supporting our partners. No partner nearer and dearer to my heart than the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, trfinc.org/players. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, the viewers, for making these shows so much fun to do. We encourage folks to come join us for our Horse Player Happy Hour shows on Thursdays. We get a great conversation going in the comments. We were talking before with Scotty about Horse Player Community. Horse Player Happy Hour is a place for us to do it. The money goes to charity, and 2 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats added to the prize pool. Cost just $20 to play. Horseplayers.com for more details on that one. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos! Just me.